Hello, this is Ian Berg with the Commercial News, dated Wednesday, April 25th, 2018. We'll start today's reading on the front page of the paper with the article, First Fridays for Fun, New Downtown Event to Begin in June, by Jennifer Bailey. In addition to the free Summer Sounds concerts downtown on Friday nights, the city is planning to start First Fridays. First Friday is a name for various public events in some cities that occur on the first Friday of every month. Businesses stay open and typically participate by offering a simple activity, crafts, open mic, speaker, movie, hosting an artist's work, sale, or participation in a theme, serving chili on Chili Night, meet with Santa at Christmas, murder mystery clue on Halloween, or simply stay open past the regular hours. "We are working with DDI, Downtown Danville Incorporated," said City Planner Cole Jackson. DDI announced last week the Summer Sounds concerts, and Jackson said the city is helping plan the First Friday events to start in June. He said they're in the process of planning activities for each month. Downtown businesses are expected to stay open later, and there will be food and activities. There will be a different theme for every month, Jackson adds. Some cities have a tour of art galleries and other events, he said. First Presbyterian Church already has offered to have an outdoor movie, and Fisher Theater, Danville Art League, Danville Public Library doing something before 5 p.m. Heartland Fair, Rabbitown Antiques and Artisans, Glory Days, Cafe 13, Love and Cup Food Truck, and others will participate. "It's just going to be led by the downtown businesses," Jackson said. Added city employee Amanda Vickery, who was helping plan the events, for the first theme, Game Night, there will be Yardzee, like Yahtzee, but with larger wooden dice, and possibly other games in the Kresge lot next to the former Vermilion County Courthouse Annex for people to play, in addition to what individual businesses will be doing. There will also be a volleyball net set up there all summer. Vickery added, "The Ghost Walk is a trick-or-treating theme. We are also working with the Visitors Bureau to see when the dance players might be able to come join us and visit with kids downtown," she added. "Everyone is very excited, and we are looking forward to the downtown area becoming a place for people to come together and enjoy what all it has to offer," according to Vickery. Mayor Scott Eisenhower said the city's had music downtown during lunch hours in the past and other events. Now it's trying out First Fridays. A survey is on the city's website at www.cityofdanville.org to gauge interest in activities. Questions ask, "What types of events would you like to see downtown?" and "What do you think would best complement summer sounds?" with possible answers including an outdoor movie, food, more art and shows, shopping and outdoor market, and lecture readings or other activities. The survey also asks a favorite theme, such as Game Night or Danville Through the Decades. Have you heard of First Fridays, and what hours work best for downtown events? According to city officials, other cities that have First Fridays are Urbana, Decatur, Bloomington, Carbondale, Peoria, Aurora, Rockford, and Terre Haute, Indiana. The events are for the entire community. Any business or institution outside of downtown can set up a booth. Also, any artist, musician, or performer can participate. The goal is to generate the most activity downtown to bring the largest number of people possible to the center of the community and bring people together. While some individual venues may charge admission, the overall event is free. First Friday brings people together and promotes downtown businesses. Businesses and organizations are being asked to at least open from 5 to 8 p.m. City officials say while Summer Sounds is successful, few businesses stay open, and the event appeals to a limited demographic. First Friday will diversify the available activities, creating a wider audience. By complementing Summer Sounds and creating a larger event once per month, more businesses can be expected to stay open. We'll continue next, once again on the front page, with the article, Oakwood Launches Community Center Plans, by Carol Rome. Oakwood. Interest in opening a new restaurant in downtown Oakwood has prompted village officials to move forward with plans to build a community center at the former IGA site. Mayor Clay Woodard said Tuesday village officials, quote, had been approached about selling the old fire station to a party interested in opening a mom-and-pop restaurant there. They would start out serving breakfast and lunch, he said. It would be locally owned and operated. The old fire station, however, is where the Oakwood Historical Society stores its memorabilia and old newspapers, and also where the police department parks its vehicles. Woodard said accommodating the new restaurant means the village would need to accelerate its plans to build a community center at the former IGA site on South Scott Street. The IGA structure was demolished last week. We're now pursuing an architect to draw up plans for the community center, Woodard said. We would incorporate the Historical Society, the police station, and all the village's offices in the same building. The community room also would be equipped with a kitchen, he added. We're going to keep moving forward while we've got the momentum, Woodard said. In addition, board members approved to spend up to $15,000 to purchase, repair, and replace the decals on a 2010 ambulance with 105,000 miles on it from the Vermilion County, Indiana Ambulance Service. They're closing up shop and we're replacing an older ambulance with a newer one with half the miles on it, Woodard said. Board members also putting the village's old ambulance up to bid to sell it. They approved a bid from Midwest Asphalt of Tilton for $8,200 to pour and finish concrete for a basketball court at the village's new park, Veterans Park, on Barbara Street. They approved advertising for bids on three lots the village owns in the second subdivision of the Lake Bluff Mobile Home Park. We need to start liquidating property, Woodard said. The village doesn't need to be in the land business. All three lots are located along Lee Street. We will be able to provide a family with a nice lot to build a home on, he said. We'll go next to the article, Asbestos Contract Given Board Okay, by Jennifer Bailey. Danville. Alderman Tuesday night recommended approving an asbestos abatement contract for the former Gulix Eliana Medical Equipment and Supply property. The $24,440 contract is with Environmental Assurance LLC. The full City Council will act on the contract next week. After completion, this will allow us to get the building down on the ground, said Danville Public Works Deputy Director Ray Garcia. The city plans to do the demolition itself of the building at 912 North Vermilion Street. City officials are still working on a pre-development agreement for a two-business strip mall on that corner at Fairchild and Vermilion Streets. Also Tuesday, the City Council's Public Services Committee recommended combining the city's Zoning Commission and Zoning Board of Appeals into one body. Other changes to the Zoning Commission would have it go from 9 members to 7. Danville Planning Manager Chris Milliken said the city's continued to have issues in getting a quorum and finding people who want to be active with the Zoning Commission. Milliken said the Zoning Commission typically only meets about 6 times a year. It's set up to meet monthly for special use permits and zoning items to act on. The Zoning Board of Appeals meets far less to only act on zoning variances and appeals. Milliken said other communities have combined the two boards also due to quorum issues and because the boards have similar functions. Ward 7 Alderman Steve Foster questioned if only 4 commissioners showing up for a meeting, and with only 4 members constituting the new quorum needed, there could be more tie votes on items. Milliken said a tie would mean denial. The city could change the city's zoning ordinance to require a minimum of 4 votes for approval prior to sending the zoning item onto the City Council for final action, he said. Other aldermen questioned the city placing more of a burden on a petitioner, and the City Council wanting a true representation of the Zoning Commission. The Zoning Commission next month will be talking about the proposed changes. In other business Tuesday, the committee heard Comptroller Shelley Scott say the city has gotten a lot of phone calls from people about the higher public safety pension fee on garbage sewer bills. She said the city has started an appeals list for those who think they should be getting a discount on the fee. City officials have said if someone receives a senior disabled or veteran discount on their property tax bill and the 50% discount is not reflected on their public safety pension fee, to come to the Robert E. Jones Municipal Building at 17 West Main Street. They need to bring their property tax bill and show the exemption granted. The discount applies to the primary residence only, not rental property a person might also own. We'll continue next with the article, First Graders to Show Off Their Math Skills, by Carol Rome. Danville. First graders from all seven of Danville's elementary schools will tackle story problems, progressive computation, multiplication, fractions, and even algebra later this week at the Danville District 118 First Grade Math Challenge. The seventh annual challenge will take place from 10 to 11 a.m. on Friday in the Danville High School Gymnasium. The first math challenge, originally created by Southwest Elementary math teacher Renna Pate, debuted in 2012, with just Southwest and Cannon Elementary School first graders competing in Southwest's cafeteria. Pate, who is retiring in May at the end of the school year, will be joining us for her final year at the event, Curriculum Director Mary Ellen Bunton said. The challenge has grown since then, with the competition moving to the high school from Danville Area Community College last year, so that DHS students who are in calculus can work with the first graders. At least 20 DHS calculus students are going to be paired with the teams from the elementary schools where they had attended as youngsters, according to Bunton. More than 50 first graders from all seven elementary schools in the district are expected to participate in this year's event, with the schools bringing at least one team each. Students are chosen by their teachers to participate in the math challenge. We will have more students and teams than last year, Bunton said. A new feature this year is the addition of prizes for some of the first graders. We've added new prizes this year, and it is so cute, Bunton enthused. We already know all the kids coming to the challenge are good at math, but we wanted to reward them for their character and how they interact with one another, she said. So the teachers nominated students for their building based on character, leadership, and love of math. Two students will be selected to receive a t-shirt that reads, "If there was a problem, yo, I'll solve it," which is a line from the lyrics of Vanilla Ice's 1990 hit, Ice Ice Baby. All of the students who were nominated will receive a word cloud of their name and the words used to describe them, Bunton said. When the competition first began in 2012, Common Core was a new teaching concept. With Common Core, students are no longer just seeking the correct answer, but also must be able to explain their thinking and processes for problem solving. In addition, the idea behind the competition is to have the first graders try math problems they normally wouldn't do, including second and third grade level math. Students meet with teachers, teaching assistants, and data and instructional facilitators to practice working on math problems and to understand they have to share their thinking as a team. During the hour-long challenge, first graders will compete in teams of three and have 5 minutes to answer each of the 10 different kinds of story problems or math questions. Working cooperatively, the children are encouraged to use a variety of processes, including drawing pictures or using manipulatives, a number line, a 100 chart, or a part-part whole box. Teams will have time to plan and discuss their answer. For each of the 10 math problems, one team will be chosen to present its answer, with the student speaker explaining it to a judge using a microphone. Youngsters are awarded points for obtaining the correct answers, and additional points for explaining how he or she arrived at the correct answer. Students are not competing against other schools, but rather are trying to collect the most points for their team. Final scores will determine what level the team is awarded at the conclusion of the competition. Teams are eligible to score at the championship level if they have collected enough bonus points. It is possible all participating teams could achieve championship level and receive a rosette ribbon to take back to their school. Pate's idea to create the challenge was based on her book, When Do Dandelions Become Weeds? A Primary Guide for Problem Solving. The mathematical problems in Pate's book are designed to challenge students to complete more complex and multi-step story problems. The competition will provide students with an opportunity to demonstrate and reflect on what they learned this school year. It also will be a celebration of the students' progress with their parents, teachers, and peers. We'll go now to the death notices. Terry Sue Biddle Stevens, 68, of rural Williamsport passed away on Sunday, April 22nd. Friends may call at the Mao's Funeral Home in Attica from 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern on Wednesday, April 25th. Services will be at 1 p.m. Eastern on Thursday, April 26th. Burial will follow at the VA Cemetery in Danville, Illinois. Memorial contributions may be made to the ALS Association. Ira D. Knight, 93, passed away on Friday, April 20th, in Evansville, Indiana. Graveside service with full military honors is pending. Memorial contributions may be made to Centenary United Methodist Church. Geraldine McBride Hawkins, 87, passed away on Monday, April 16th. A graveside service will be held at 2 p.m. on Friday, April 27th, at Pleasant Grove Cemetery in Oakwood. Anita Sills, 80, of Danville, passed away on Friday, April 20th, 2018. A celebration of life service will be at 2 p.m. on Thursday, April 26th, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville. Burial will be at Sunset Memorial Park in Danville. Visitation will be 5 to 7 p.m. on Wednesday, April 25th, at the funeral home. Memorial donations may be made to the American Heart Association. Gail Richard Inglesby, 82, of rural Vetersburg, passed away on Friday, April 20th. Friends may call from 4 to 8 p.m. Eastern on Wednesday, April 25th, at the Mao's Funeral Home in Hillsboro, Indiana. Services will be at 10 a.m. Eastern on Thursday, April 26th, at the funeral home. Burial will follow in Campbell's Chapel Cemetery in Vetersburg. Memorial contributions may be made to Community Bible Baptist Church, Sterling Christian Church, or the Foundation County 4-H Foundation. James Allen Bridgman, 38, of Mattoon, Illinois, and formerly of Neoga, Illinois, passed away on April 23rd. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. on Friday, April 27th, in Swungle O'Dell Funeral Home of Neoga. As per James's wishes, his body will be cremated there, and there will be no funeral services at this time. Larry Dean Chowning, 78, of Vetersburg, Indiana, passed away on Thursday, April 19th. Per Larry's wishes, there will be no public services, but memorial contributions may be given to F&AM Lodge 491 in Vetersburg. Janice Lynn Johnson, 66, of Kingman, Indiana, passed away on April 21st. Donations can be made in Janice's honor to the OSF Cancer Center in Danville, Illinois, CARA Animal Rescue in Tilton, Illinois, or to Southside Church of Christ in Danville. David A. Riggle, 56, of Marion, Illinois, passed away on Friday, April 20th. Visitation will be 4 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, April 24th, at Wilson McReynolds Funeral Home at 900 North Court Street in Marion. Following visitation, the memorial service will be at 7 p.m. on Tuesday. Interment will follow next to his wife in Rose Hill Cemetery of Marion at a later date. Memorial contributions may be made to the Kidney Foundation and mailed in care of Wilson McReynolds Funeral Home. Richard Higgins, 77, of Rossville, passed away on Sunday, April 22nd. Funeral services will be at noon on Friday at Morningstar Ministries at 201 North Chicago Street in Rossville. Visitation will be from 10 a.m. to noon on Friday at the church. Orlando E. Jones, 56, of Danville, formerly of Champaign, passed away on Wednesday, April 18th. A celebration of life will be on Friday, April 27th. At New Generation Christian Fellowship at 1401 West John Street in Champaign. Visitation will begin at 11 a.m., with services following at noon. Carol Justice, 74, of Danville, passed away on April 18, 2018. A celebration of life will be from 3 to 7 p.m. on Saturday, April 28th, at Rabbitown Banquet Center. Memorial donations can be made to the Vermilion County Animal Shelter. Joseph B. Stanfield, 65, of Attica, Indiana, formerly of Homer, passed away on Friday, April 20th. Friends may call at Mao's Funeral Home in Attica, Indiana, on Saturday, April 28th, from 2 p.m. until service time at 4 p.m. We'll continue next with the article, DACC to Consider Campus Repairs, by Carol Rome. Danville. Danville Area Community College trustees are expected Thursday to approve the issuance of a $1 million bond to purchase technology and instructional equipment, as well as take care of a list of deferred maintenance projects. The funding will be used for some much-needed repairs on campus, including installing new carpeting on the second floor of the Clark Tower building, according to DACC President Stefan Nacko. In addition, board members will consider approving a bid of $115,000 from Patton Painting of Danville to paint the white trim on Vermilion Hall, Prairie Hall, and the Clack Tower buildings, and a bid of $49,499 from County Asphalt of Urbana to crack fill, seal, and stripe 5 parking lots, and approving the repaving of Circle Drive and using Don Walton for the architect and engineering services. Those are acute needs, and with the bond, we are able to do this work, Nacko said. It's all about keeping the campus in good physical repair, he said. Also on Thursday, board members will recognize the business office for receiving a certificate of achievement for excellence in financial reporting. They will recognize the Phi Theta Kappa 2018 All-Illinois Academic Team. They will recognize the DACC cheerleaders. They will hear about the Continuous Quality Improvement Report. They will hear a financial update. They will hear the President's Report. They will accept Student Trustee Election Report and administer an oath of office to the Addison Wise of Hoopston, who will be seated as Student Trustee. They will consider approving a $215 in travel expenditures for Board President Dave Harvey to attend an Illinois Community College Trustees Association seminar in suburban Lyle and the Phi Theta Kappa banquet in Springfield. They will consider approving First Financial Bank to provide financial services to the college for a 5-year period starting July 1st. They will consider calling a public hearing on the intent of the board to sell $1 million in funding bonds for the purpose of paying claims against the district. They will consider entering into a 5-year lease with GFI Digital of Champaign for $6,422 per month to lease 29 copiers, and they will consider whether to pursue a potential property acquisition. For some more Danville news, we'll go to today's News Gazette with the article, Eisenhower Prepared to Move On, City Manager Proposal Key to If He'll Run Again, by Tracy Crane. Danville. After 16 years as mayor of Danville, Scott Eisenhower is looking for a new opportunity, maybe even one that takes him beyond his hometown. The prudent thing for me to do at this point is look at other opportunities, said Eisenhower, 53, a lifelong Danville native. Last week, a group of private citizens, calling itself Moving Danville Forward, announced a petition drive to put on the November 6th ballot a question asking city voters if they want to change their form of government from a mayor council to the city manager council. That means the current mayor's position, a full-time gig with a $73,000 annual salary, would become a part-time job. If it comes to that, Eisenhower isn't interested. All I'm saying is I want to at least look at what opportunities might exist, if in fact this position is eliminated, said Eisenhower, who added that he wants to stay involved in advocating for local government, either at the state level or for another municipality. The reality of it is, I love local government, and if there's no opportunity for me to do that in this community, I would have to open myself to going outside the community. While he's against changing the form of government, Eisenhower said he won't be the face of opposition either. It's no secret. I oppose the change in government. I do so simply because I believe it's in the best interest of this community for the citizens as a whole to elect their CEO, rather than conceding that power to a group of 14 aldermen, he said, prior to Tuesday night's Danville City Council meeting. Under a city manager form of government, there would still be 14 aldermen, two each elected from seven wards, who would hire a city manager after a search process. A mayor would still be elected, but would not oversee day-to-day operations of local government. The city manager would. A mayoral election will be held next spring, and the deadline to file paperwork to be a candidate is after the November 6th election. So Eisenhower wouldn't have to file to run for office before knowing whether it will be a full-time or part-time job. If another job opportunity doesn't come along before the election, Eisenhower said he will decide if he's running for a fifth term after the November referendum, assuming organizers get the question on the ballot. If, in fact, the referendum fails, that's when I will make the decision, he said. All I'm saying is I need to be prepared and willing to seek another employment opportunity, so I'm prepared to move on. Pat O'Shaughnessy, one of the organizers with Moving Danville Forward, said the idea has been well received. The statements by those who think our efforts are to reduce representation in any ward in this great city are totally false, and nothing but distraction to the professional and experienced help that the future demands for our children and grandchildren, O'Shaughnessy said. Eisenhower, who was not involved in getting the grassroots group going, said some community members are mistaken to think this movement is about him becoming city manager. I have zero interest in serving as the city manager in this community, he said. No question, that's what I'm doing now. The difference is the autonomy I have now as the mayor that I would not have as a city manager who would be accountable only to 14 aldermen. What I like about the position I have now is I'm accountable to the public as a whole, and at the end of the day, it's the public who gets to decide whether I continue. Moving Danville Forward organizers said they envision a search that extends beyond Danville and a strong pool of experienced candidates. Eisenhower said he doesn't want people to misconstrue his opposition as him merely trying to save his job, and he hopes Danville residents focus on what's best for the city as a whole. That's about all the time we have for today's reading. This has been Ian Berg with the Commercial News, dated Wednesday, April 25th, 2018. Thanks for joining me today, and I look forward to reading with you again sometime.